Hey guys, we're back with another incredible episode of Career Talks. You ready? Welcome everybody to another episode of Career Talks. As always, I am your host, Orlando Haynes. Super excited for you guys to join us tonight. This is another dynamic topic with another dynamic guest. She is a content creator. She has her own YouTube channel, very successful YouTube channel. She's all about career development. She's a speaker, a trainer. One of the things that she has on her LinkedIn profile, it says toxic job detox, which I absolutely love. She does career strategy. She is the founder of Career Glow Up, or should I say she's a Career Glow Up creator, which is super cool. Love that unique name. But I won't belabor the intro because I want her to come on and share some more about herself. But let me introduce you to this amazing young lady, Miss Jennifer Brick. How are you?
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here tonight.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for on such short notice, too. On such short notice. So that's a true professional who can just say, you know what? Let's do it. I have time. And you're doing some phenomenal things. I think when we first talked, I've been watching your content on YouTube, here on LinkedIn, and I started following you on IG, which you all should do, and she'll share all that content as well, those connections, where to follow her as well. And I can tell you, folks, Jennifer is hilarious. She's authentic and hilarious with her content. So you're just naturally drawn in by how you deliver career information. So without further ado, again, let me shut up. And you share about yourself a little more with the folks.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I think you did such a good job encapsulating all the essentials. So I am a tech industry escapee. I was in the tech industry for just over 12 years before I left to start my company. And really what I do is I create content programs and do private workshops and speaking on how to be successful in your career and overcome obstacles at work. So one of the things that I'm became known for on YouTube is toxic jobs. So I'm like the toxic job chick. Like, that's pretty cool. If you think of toxic jobs, you think of me, hopefully.
In a good way.
Yeah, hopefully in the best possible way. Not that I'm creating toxic jobs, but one of the things that I'm really passionate about is helping people get over toxic jobs, because I'm sure we're going to get into it today, because I love the title for tonight of Workplaces Aren't Working, is that there are so many obstacles that we're facing at work, and really the interpersonal dynamics and the workplace cultures are a thing that isn't working for a lot of people. So it's a topic I'm super passionate about. It lets me, you know, focus on dysfunction. I'm a criminologist by education, so it makes it somewhat relevant to my degree. And it allows me, it's actually really interesting looking at human interactions through the lens of criminological ideology and seeing what you can apply in the corporate world.
That's pretty interesting. That's pretty interesting. So let's dive into that. What made you go that path? And then how does that help you in what you do now?
Yeah, I had the most non-linear path. Like, if anyone thinks is early in their career and they think that they have to have it figured out, I'm pretty much proof positive that you don't. So I studied criminology thinking I was going to be a lawyer. That was the plan. When I was six, I decided I'm going to be a lawyer. And right up until I was pretty much getting into law school when I was 23, and I was like, wait, I don't want to do that anymore. So I embarked on what I like to call a career walkabout. So I worked in accounting, sales, admin. I did recruiting. Like, I did everything before I fell into training. So training is always my home. Back when I found it, I was like, I could be a trainer for life. I love helping people get to a eureka moment. And I've always been the person that was really good at writing resumes. I was always good at interviewing, probably because I was a job hopper, if you couldn't tell. but I was always the one that people were coming to for help. And as my career progressed and as I climbed up the corporate ladder, one of the things that I became very passionate about was helping people that were earlier on in their careers at the organizations in which I worked. So building out programs for my team or for the greater organization to help people do the same thing. And it ended up, I never thought that kind of training in customer success, which is a world that I lived in for so long, could be overtaken passion-wise by something else. But really it was career success that had, like, it gained my heart. I was like, you know what? This is the thing that I really want to be doing. And I always like to say, like, I was always an entrepreneur pretending to be an employee because I really wanted to know how to run a company before I started a company. I wanted someone to pay me to learn how was really my long game. So I always knew I would eventually go to start my own company. I just didn't know what it was going to be. And then luckily I had good coaching, good support, and was able to put the pieces together to where they are now.
I love that. I love that. You wanted to get paid to learn to kind of exit corporate, in essence. Yeah. So what, as we were talking before coming on live tonight a couple of days ago, and this topic came up.
Yeah.
Is this something that you're hearing through clients of yours, just their feedback? Why this topic and why now? Because it ties into, like, the great, you know, resignation. But why now? Why now?
Yeah, I think that we've kind of, there's so many, the last year and a half, 2 years has really gotten us, I like to describe it, like, not so elegantly, as our BS tolerance has been reduced down to about zero. So I think a lot of the grievances and the ways that work wasn't working before have just kind of become intolerable. This is where you're seeing, you know, people are refusing to go back into the office. They don't want to have the standard 9-to-5. We see people quitting jobs for other jobs, but also there's been record numbers of LLC registrations in the first half of the year. We see people going into early retirement because their lives don't look the way that they want them to look. And I think it's because, you know, companies have been built in this very specific way in, like, the 1950s. And that was, like, 70 years ago. And workplace culture is still kind of hanging out back there where it was built for a very specific type of person to succeed in a very specific kind of way. It wasn't built for everyone to be successful. Mm-hmm. So the rules need to change. The game needs to change. And I think that's why a lot of what I talk about, because I love dismantling social constructs. I'm obsessed with it. And I think that's why, you know, the content that I've been creating has been doing so well, is just because it's resonating with people. It's, you know, this is the thing that I'm actually feeling that I'm having a hard time describing, just because a lot of what I like to challenge is so well accepted.
I love that. So your goal is not only just to provide great content, great advice, actionable advice, but really break the status quo and challenge the status quo when it comes to this future of work and what we're doing today. So if you were to list out, or if you're probably doing it because you're putting out this content, if you were to list out, you know, your top five things or three things that you're hearing, what's causing workplaces not to work anymore, what are some of those things? And then we'll unpack each one.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that people feel undervalued and underappreciated. They're giving it their all. They're working hard. They're working all of the hours, but they're not getting what they thought that they were going to get out of it. Because from the time that we were little, we were told that if we worked hard, we would succeed. You would get good grades in school. And if you go, you get your corporate job, you work hard, hard being a lot of hours, you're supposed to get promoted. But then you start to see that you're being passed over, or you're not getting the opportunities, or the opportunities just aren't there. And that's frustrating. It's frustrating when you're doing the absolute best you can. You're working on all the things. You're overachieving in everything that you do. and people aren't noticing it, let alone giving you any praise or any of the benefits that's supposed to come from that. So that's what, like, I think the biggest thing that I hear, and even if it's not the thing that's being said, it's the subtext of what's being said.
So looking at undervalued, would you say if that was a, if there was a subtext, it would be unfulfilled due to not being, you know, noticed and recognized and passed over, et cetera.
Absolutely. Like it's, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been in that position. I've been in the position where I was like, I've completely outgrown this role. And I'm not challenged. And I think especially for ambitious high performers, if you're not being challenged in your role, it's pretty much impossible to feel fulfilled in the role because you're just kind of sitting there treading water, right?
You're going through the motions.
Yeah. And it's like, but I'm not getting anywhere.
You know, I can swim hard, but it's not going to get me anywhere because I'm in the wrong lake or I'm in the wrong ocean. This is completely not where I need to be. I get that.
Yeah.
And what would you say number two would be? What?
So number two is definitely like the work structures. So the going into the office 9 to 5, you're wearing a suit. Your boss is the boss and they have total say over the things that you do. So kind of the way that workplaces work, but also the way that workplaces are functioning. Again, in my opinion, quite antiquated. If we look back to the 1950s, things are exactly the way that they were then. But then if you look at it again, going a layer deeper of, you know, if we look at kind of how the system was composed and who was supposed to succeed in that system, those people are succeeding in that system. But anyone that doesn't fit that particular archetype isn't really getting ahead. So if you watch enough of my videos or read enough of my posts on LinkedIn, you know that I like to harp on Chad. So Chad is like the dude, and he's not always a dude. Like Chad's not always a dude. It's genderless, but I have to give it a name. But Chad's the person who everybody loves, but he's kind of a slacker. He's not really good at what he does, but everyone thinks he's really good. Like the right people think that he has a lot of potential, so he gets ahead.
Wow. He's like the best pretender.
He's like, but it, you know, and the way I summarize it is, you know, leadership either identifies with Chad because they're like, he's like me 10 years ago. So by validating Chad, they're really validating themselves and, you know, saying I deserve to be in this position. And because I deserve to be in this position, people like me deserve to be in this position. And it's not always a conscious decision that they're making or a conscious thought pattern, but it is a thought pattern that is happening. And then on the other hand, we also, and this really applies to everyone, not just the leaders, but the Chad dynamic is people either identify with him or they want to be like him. Now, not necessarily they love him and they want to be like him, but they want to have the same opportunities. They want to have the same advantages. They want to have the same, you know, high impact reputation, whether it's based on merit or not for Chad. They want a lot of the things that Chad has.
Wow.
So he really people gravitate towards him and it's a good thing and it's a bad thing. He drives a lot of us a little bit nuts, but we can learn a lot from Chad too.
So it almost sounds like it's the guy who, or girl, well, we'll say guy, who's the life of the party, right? Who comes in, gets all the attention.
Yes.
But you wonder, the leaders are like, this guy's sharp. He knows what he's talking about because he knows a little bit about a lot of things that sound smart, but the people who work alongside him, like he doesn't do anything.
Or he has a ton of confidence. So he actually doesn't know anything, but he has so much conviction that people are like, wow, he's really onto something. Or he's a little bit dodgy. He's not always intentionally dodgy, but he'll take credit for other people's work. So he's the one who hears the idea that no one else heard in the meeting and restates it so it's his own. And again, he's not always doing it maliciously, but that's the behaviors that we see with Chad. Chad gets away with a lot.
Got it. So when it comes to the work structure, we're talking about this on-site and working remote world. Mm-hmm. I've noticed that there are companies that got forced into this situation, right? And are now realizing, hey, we can work this, but may still go against the grain. Are you seeing that or hearing that from employees or from employers directly?
Yeah, most of the people that I'm working, so I hear it kind of from all sides. Mm-hmm. It's the shift has been really interesting because at least in the tech industry, there's been, when I started in tech, working remotely and working from home was a benefit that many people had. And over the last decade or so, there has been this increasing trend towards working in the office. And it's really like, at least in the tech industry, it was modeled off of companies like Google and Yahoo and Facebook, who really demanded people to be in office. They didn't really have a large scale remote team. And so what I saw was a lot of startups were actually mimicking that and saying, no, you have to be in the office because it's where collaboration happens. And, you know, people don't work if they're not in the office and all of these things. And then, of course, our hands are forced and we realize, you know, profitability is still going up. Productivity is going up. People are probably working more than before. And I don't think that the way that it happened and the number of hours and how it adapted was necessarily healthy. But then there's that, I do see a pull in a lot of organizations back towards like, oh, but people want to come back to the office. And I think sometimes leadership wants to think that more people want to go back in the office than really do because they like being in the office. And so I think that there's, first of all, there are people, if you're an extrovert, you probably are dying to go back 5 days a week. Like you can't wait if you haven't already made the return to work. But also the other dynamic that also underlies this, and sometimes it's hard to identify which is which, and often I think it's both at play, is also that I think remote work requires a lot of trust, but also a lot of organization from the company in order to enable success. Because the way that you manage a team remotely is so different than the way that we manage a team on site. I had the benefit of, you know, 10 years ago, I became a remote employee, even though I was sitting in New York City and I was a New York City employee. We didn't really have a New York office at the company that I started working for when I moved here. And I ended up going back to the office, but I became a leader in a remote team where my team was literally all over the globe covering all these crazy time zones. And then I went to, okay, I'm managing people that I can actually see. And it was so, so, so different. And it honestly took me a while to see how different it was. So I think that we do have both of those dynamics kind of going on. There's still that just antiquated belief of like, I believe work that I can see.
Yep.
And for so much of us, a lot of the work that we're doing is really knowledge work. We're having meetings, we're like writing documents, producing code. It's not all things that at the end of the day, your manager can log in and see everything that you completed, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're sitting in an office, they can see you're working and not watching YouTube or surfing LinkedIn, you know, all of these terrible things that we're not supposed to do.
But you made a good point when you brought up Google. But see, what I think what fooled a lot of people too is what Google made it so inviting to be on site, right?
Yes.
They created this cornucopia of a lifestyle where I'm going to give up my home because Google land and Google world is, I get, and I've known folks who work in there, so they're like, you get your laundry, you got three meals a day, right? Everything is custom made, you daycare on site, everything. You can live on the campus. So people thought, how do we mimic that in every company to whatever level we can afford to get people back to work? And I think that threw a massive monkey wrench on thinking that the productivity is not doable remote.
Yeah, it was, you know, it's interesting with Google because it all sounds like such a good benefit. Like, oh, I get free breakfast, lunch, and dinner. This is so great. And I have all of these things. But that was so that you stay in the office and work more.
Exactly.
There's, you know, so like, is it a benefit? We have to ask ourselves. Yeah, and it is interesting. I know a lot of people at the big tech companies that you know, have all of those benefits. And I mean, it must have been so hard for them for the past year and a half to have to learn how to cook their food or order Seamless or DoorDash or whatever. But I also, it's also been really interesting because a lot of people that I know at the big tech companies that do have these benefits have left those companies for smaller organizations. And those companies are often remote or they're going into remote positions because those benefits don't matter when you're not in the office most days of the week. So we really have to, I think that there's better benefits that can be given to remote employees to kind of simulate that experience. But I also saw, especially early in the pandemic, a lot of, especially like more junior level people that I work with, they were being tapped into meetings at inappropriate hours. And the demands really went up in terms of how long their workday was because they weren't commuting. And there was this expectation of, oh, well, you're home. Oh, you don't have to commute. So you work more in its place. And I think that that's really unhealthy. You know, there's this, the North American mentality of working so many hours and not taking breaks and not taking vacation is one of my favorite things to rant about because that is so unhealthy. And it's a, like, it's an express lane to burnout. And companies should not want employees to burn out. That is expensive. They're going to leave. There's medical costs that go with experiencing burnout because it is a physical experience as well. And it's just not going to get you the most productivity. And there's research back, like one of my favorite studies to cite on this is there was a study at Stanford years ago and they looked at productivity. And after 55 hours a week, it starts to decline really rapidly. And actually, it's after 50 hours, it really starts to decline. After 55 hours, it's off a cliff. So if you work 70 hours a week, your productivity level is the same as someone working 55 hours a week.
Oh.
So when we think about that time, those extra 15 hours are performative. And I cannot tell you the number of people that I have worked with, that I have spoken to, where they're like, yeah, I sit at my desk until 9 p.m. and I'm not working, but I need to be there.
Wow.
And it's that visible. Again, we go back to that office. I can see you. So you're here. It doesn't matter if you're doing anything. It looks like you're doing work.
Wow. That's insane.
It's so nuts when you actually break it down like this.
It's so counterproductive, though. I think what happens mentally for employees, though, that's like a time where they can start planning their exit on company time. It's like, right? this is not for me. So let me do, I'll have my work screen up, but I'm checking this, checking that. Cause I know there's not a lot of people in the office. No one's here to oversee me as much. And that can be dangerous.
Unless they have like because the other thing that we saw an increase of over the past year and a half as well is employee monitoring software.
Oh yeah.
Correct. So your screen's probably being captured, emails are being captured. What you're doing on a company device is public information, and that's something that people really need to be aware of. So if you think that you're going to low-key cruise and find a new job, it might not be as low-key as you thought.
Yep, I know a company that told me, they was like, hey, and it was just a story that came up from a former manager who's like, they had to let someone go from our TA team prior to us joining the organization because they were monitoring his laptop and all he was doing was watching YouTube. And they just cut. He one day tried to log in, was asked to come to HR, and it was a wrap. I was like, holy cow.
But you know, this is so, I don't want to discount like someone who is choosing to ignore their job and just mess around. There needs to be consequences to that, and companies should not have to pay. But on the other hand, I question like, and I'm so against micromanagement, but was there no check-ins or oversight or deliverables that this person needed? Like, I think some people need structure and they need to be given work because they won't proactively go and do it and things like that. And I assume in TA that they're like, it would be visible if absolutely nothing was happening.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I mean, maybe that's why they were watching him, and maybe that's why they actually looked at the salary reports and they're like, oh, you were watching YouTube videos on career advice, yet doing nothing for your career. Exactly. Maybe he was looking up how to do his job. You want to assume the best about people.
That's awesome. Love the flip. So as we dive back to three main areas that you've identified when it comes to, you know, workplaces aren't working, what would be the third of it for you?
I think, that's a juicy question. You're really making me pull all of these things apart. I think the thing that we really need to change, and I did speak to this a little bit more, but I think it's the ultimate thing that we need to change, is that I think the rules of the game need to be refreshed. So everyone who works at a company is dealing with office politics. You don't have to actually be in the office to deal with office politics. You can call them corporate politics, but politics are pretty rampant. And I think that a lot of people, they show up really negatively a lot of the time. And so I find that a lot of people really tend to avoid them. And one thing that I think, and this is not so much that companies need to change, I think it's us as individuals. I see like people that are like, I don't play politics, I don't like politics, or there's like the super political competitive people. And ultimately, what I would love to see is a change, and I think that this extends beyond work as well, of I would love to see just a real effort and a real focus on finding ways to work better together, to understand each other better, to collaborate with each other better, to more effectively communicate with each other. You know, one thing that I get a lot of pushback on my YouTube channel for some of the things that I say, because what I always advocate for is assume the best possible intentions, because most people not trying to be bad people. Most people are not actively trying to ruin your day, your job, or your life. I genuinely believe that. I think that we need to understand the way that people work. And I think that we enter a lot of interactions based on how we feel and our experience. But when we're reacting from that space, because maybe someone said or did something that upset you or hurt you or offended you, to just go right into the defensive, which triggers their defense, which closes down communication, which hurts a working relationship. And really what I advocate for is the way that you rise is by lifting other people up. Because ultimately, your coworker who's gossiping, your insecure boss, they're unhappy, they're insecure, they're not feeling worthy. And that's why they're acting the ways that they do. And because they only know how to bring people down to their level. And I think that there's so much more power in taking the time to empathize, to understand someone and give them the benefit of the doubt, and to really find a way for everyone to win. Because there is truly space for everyone to win, no matter what you're doing. Unless you're like a professional sports player, in which case there's going to be a winner, but that's another story.
Gotcha. So you said something pretty interesting there that I wanted to get your opinion on when it comes to, you know, the office politics. Mm-hmm. So if you were running a mid-size, you know, or to large company, what would be some of the office politics that you would change to kind of cultivate a better culture in that organization?
Identify and dismantle the empire builders. I think that's one of the biggest productivity and profitability killers in an organization is people that are land grabbing to land grab. I've never seen empire building end up in good organizational design and positive working cultures. There might be pockets within it, but when the person at the top is setting the example of power grabbing, everyone under them starts to mimic that level of leadership. So I think as leaders, we need to acknowledge we are leading and people are looking up to us. So the good things that we do and the not so great things that we do, we are going to see leadership in the lower levels mimicking that. And ultimately, our individual contributors are going to mimic that as well. So I think the acquisition of power for the acquisition of power mm-hmm. is something that we really need to be mindful of and change our relationship with. I want to have this doesn't mean you should have it, you know? Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that like I really encourage leaders to look out for. And then the other thing that I do think that we need to be mindful of is also we need to understand the personalities that are in play. One of the videos that I posted a few weeks ago, it's called The Five Villains at Work.
The Five Villains?
The Five Villains.
Okay. I'm going to go watch that.
I don't like calling them villains because I ultimately don't think that really any of them are bad people, but they're people who deploy like negative power acquisition tactics. Because I think the acquisition of power is not good or bad. It's completely neutral. And a lot of things that we do along the way, not good, not bad, neutral. However, when things are happening at the expense of other people, mm-hmm. whether it's the way that leadership is treating teams or teams are behaving within themselves, this is something that we really need to be aware of. Because I think as leaders, what we want is to have organizations that people want to work at. And we want them to want to stay at their jobs so that we're not seeing double-digit churn. And we're not having a hard time recruiting right now. And, you know, if you look at the companies that are having an easier time, like competition is stiff out there. And a lot of people are resigning from their jobs. And there's the great reshuffle. Like not everyone is exiting corporate. A lot of people are just bouncing around. But the companies that they're going to generally have good reputations in terms of not just how work looks, but also the experience. And I think the better experience that we give employees, they're going to be more productive. More productive teams equal more profits, more mm-hmm. revenue, decrease waste, like cut the waste of time. Like this is one thing that organizations, how much time, which is money, is lost to like all of this corporate drama that happens. So again, motivation to like nip that stuff out. but then also obviously like the cost to hire and the cost of churn is so high.
Yeah.
And these are costs that we can mitigate. We won't be able to eliminate them. Of course not. That's not a reasonable expectation, but we can mitigate them as much as possible just by focusing on employee experience.
That's true. That's true. And I love that phrase, kind of destroying the that empire. That corporate empire kind of mindset mentality, because I don't see a benefit in one wanting the power just to have the power. Like in today's corporate landscape, you're accountable across the board.
Yeah,
like you're that player coach. You're not just a leader who just point fingers and delegate.
Right.
You got projects to execute on yourself. Right. So that's crazy.
No, honestly, those people, I just want to go to them and say, like, you know, who hurt you? Like, why do you need this? Because they're like, ultimately, like the acquisition of power is because they're looking for validation, and it's validation that they're not getting internally, and it's not coming from any other area. And I think this also goes with so much of our identities being based on work. And mm-hmm. I think especially when you are like that ambitious and you are scaling the corporate ladder, especially if you're doing it quickly and you're building this big empire, I think so much of your identity and your worthiness is derived from work. And we need to address that too.
Yeah.
So if that has become a leadership ethos or part of the leadership culture, we really need to look at, you know, the human and how can we support this human?
I like that a lot. So I'm trying to phrase the question. So what's something unique that you heard from probably folks that are, you know, like you said, during the reshuffle, because mm-hmm. that's true. Everyone is not just exiting corporate and trying to be an entrepreneur, but what's some of the rarest reasons you've heard that you're like, oh, wow, no one's talking about this one.
One that popped up that I actually found to be really surprising, and I'm not sure why it surprised me. I heard of a lot of people making shifts because they weren't getting enough work. They were being under leveraged. So okay. They had all this talent and all this passion, and they were excited to make this big impact, and their boss just wasn't giving them a chance. So they weren't being assigned work. So they're like, I'm working 8 hours a day, but I only have an hour of work to do.
Wow.
Which is, again, getting back to waste. There we go. Wow. And again, often pairing, if we look at their leadership levels, a lot of empire building going on. Or they were ready for the next challenge, and the opportunities just weren't there. So they were like, I'm not really being used. I kind of feel like I'm sitting on the bench most of the time, and I'm ready to get off the bench, and I need to make a move to do it.
Would you happen to know what field that was in? If anyone spoke to that in a poster?
It was multiple industries.
Wow.
Multiple industries. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it was understandable because some companies kept staff that they probably didn't really need because they wanted to keep staff through everything that was happening. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think companies that had, foresight and were playing the longer game knew that when the pendulum went this way last year, that it was going to swing back up this way. Right. Which is exactly what we're seeing. Maybe then there was an insufficient amount of work, but they knew it was going to be coming in. But it's very demoralizing when you have the talent, you have the capabilities, you want to show up and do the work, and it's just not being given to you. That was a big one. And so I heard from a surprising number of people.
Wow. So let me ask this, which I haven't heard throughout, listening to different podcasts or articles. I don't want to use the word catering, but meeting the request of job seekers with a hybrid workforce or a fully remote workforce, is that the answer, or is that just the answer due to the current state we're in now?
I think it's really interesting in terms of what the future of work looks like, because I think some people will tell you like, remote is the only way. Hybrid is the only way. But now we're also, I can't remember what publication it was in, but before we got on here, I was just scrolling through like my RSS feed and I saw this article, and it was about people are now going into the office to sit in Zoom meetings all day because not everyone is there because the hybrid model, right? Yeah. So unless there's like organization or there's still, distancing and things like that. So it's like, I think where I like to center it is, again, on the individual. Where do you do your best work? So, for example, my husband is one of the people who he wants to be in the office 5 days a week. He's not there yet, but he loves being in the office. He loves going in. He focuses better. He does better work. He has worked from home. He hasn't loved the experience working from home every single day. I'm used to working from home. I've mostly worked from home for the past 10 years. But I actually personally even prefer a hybrid model because sometimes I like the noise and chaos of an office space where I'm forced to focus. It's too quiet, I think it comes from like living in New York. You just need chaos sometimes. Yeah. <It's> that isn't like construction noise, So I think like we need to center as individuals, like where do I actually not like what is fun, what sounds cool? Because I feel like there's also people feel pressured to want to work remotely when they really want to be in the office and then vice versa. So I think we need to ask ourselves this question first of, okay, how do I work best? And I think what we're going to see is we have seen a lot of companies go to 100% remote. We see most companies offering hybrid as they're making the return into the office. And there's some companies that we know will likely end up being predominantly in office culture again eventually. And I think that we're just going to end up kind of all over the place. And that what we need to think about when we're making decisions about who we want to work for and where we want to work is, where do I actually want to do my work? And is this work environment the right fit in terms of that basic structure? Because if a company wants you to be in office 5 days a week, but you know that you work so much better from home, and that's not going to be an option, you know you're not going to show up and do your best work, right?
Right, right.
So I think it comes from, we've had the sample, and now it's like, okay, like what actually works for you? And I think now it's nice that, many offices are going hybrid because it lets you sample. You know, personally for me, I love just being able to like work, like wake up and be like, okay, where do I feel like working? Like, what do I have going on? Like, what meetings are on Zoom? Where do I need to be in order to get my work done? And I think for most people, that's actually going to be the best fit. And I think that companies need to find ways to support it. So big companies have an advantage of they could have a team that is on site. They can have a team that is remote, and they can have a team that is hybrid. And it could be more of a macro, like micro level decision versus smaller companies, which maybe it's more of a macro level decision for them because they don't need all of the office space if no one's going to use it.
Exactly. And I think, and I appreciate Gabe for chiming in as well. And Chris kind of said the best, interconnect. You know, the one thing is interconnects us is all of us, humanity, people meet people where they are. So I appreciate that. Yeah. And I'm just wondering, like you said, us as, you know, job seekers and career professionals, I think your search may be a little tougher because now you have three different models. Mm-hmm. That are out there and you're trying to find the one that fits you. Yeah. But then again, you don't know how many are in this hybrid model within your industry. You're like, oh my God, that's the company, but they're on site. You're like, oh no. And your second choice, I can get my hybrid, but they're in Ohio and I would have to reload. So I don't know if that starts to create somewhat a difficult situation for job seekers now, because again, you're in New York, I'm in Florida.
Yeah.
Like every company's not going to operate the same.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen. You're going to have to pick and choose. There's still going to be some sacrifice you're going to have to make. Because I mean, you got to eat, you got to survive. So there's going to be some sacrifices made on both sides. And to this, with this whole great resignation, I wanted to ask your opinion on this. Yeah. With the, you know, I don't want to say inflated of salary requests now. Mm-hmm. So that it's getting out there. It's getting out there. So how long do you think that will last? Just, and I know you don't have the magic ball, and so many companies. I know companies can't sustain that all the time. Like we're fighting for talent, and we're almost forced to pay the market value, the inflated value, just to meet what we have. But it's like, you can't sustain that, but so long.
You know, I think that there are so many market forces that come into this. So first of all, we've seen in the last year 6.2% inflation. That's if any company is giving a standard 2% cost of living increase,
you'll never meet it.
You're falling way behind.
Yeah.
Salaries are up across the board. Cost of living is up across the board. Inflation is up. The cost of everything is up. You know, there's so many. One of the things that I found was really interesting was a couple of months ago, there was a big hoopla because one of the things that it came out that Google was going to, so they're letting people work remotely, but if you're not living where the office is anymore, you are going to be, they adjust your salary. So they have like a market calculation. I think the salary, like the calculator was released or something like that. So if I am a New York City employee who's making probably 90% of market for New York City, which salaries are high. And I've been rocking out in Charlotte for last year, living my best life. I bought a house because houses are so cheap. And us people from New York and San Francisco and LA, like we're driving up the housing prices elsewhere. I can assure you of that. Everyone's ignoring this fact. Because we're like, what? That house is only $750,000? I'll buy two. I'll take two. That's like a one bedroom in Manhattan.
Exactly.
This is impacting real estate markets. But it came out that they're going to make this adjustment. And the adjustment still has them making, I'm sure, way above market rate. Like we're still talking top of market, if not exceeding. The few that I did glance at, and people were up in arms. They're like, Google is cutting employees' salaries. I'm like, we feel bad for people making like $200,000 to $500,000 a year who are snapping up houses that you can't afford anymore? You're kidding me. So this is one of the things that I think there has also, again, as we see this trend to companies that are just becoming remote, they're there are companies, there are some mid-sized to big tech companies that are paying national salaries now. So this is going to impact markets, and it's going to make talent in certain markets inaccessible. That's creating an inequity, because also when we look at it, especially, again, I keep on talking about tech just because it's where I lived for so long, of if you're not sitting in New York or San Francisco, you don't have the same access to capital. You don't have the same investors. Like, there's already so many disadvantages built in there that I think some really great companies with so much potential and brilliant ideas are going to have a hard time getting the right people in the seats that they would have gotten otherwise. I don't see, and until we see the cost of other things falling down and we see less competition in the market for talent, I don't see that the rates are going to go down. I'm not sure if the salaries will drop. Like, they traditionally haven't, kind of like real estate, knock on wood. I've got someone behind me. I should actually for real give that one a knock. But I know it's hard because especially like I know a lot of companies have very fixed salary bands. And now you also have to think about not just, okay, now I have to pay 15% more to get someone in to backfill this role. But now that person's making 15% more than my team that was already there. And they've been there for a year or 2 years or 5 years. So it's not just that one person. Now companies really need to look at up-leveling everyone. Otherwise, they're going to jump ship because the numbers that they could be getting are so much higher. And unfortunately, most companies aren't the Facebooks and Googles of the world that can just throw money. You know, there's still a lot of companies that are recovering and struggling, and profit margins are narrow. So it is hard, especially when we start to look at like all of these implications and how it's not just the one domino, it's going to knock over these 10 dominoes that we really need to think about. I think the whole economy is really like gone a bit mad, and I wish I had all of the solutions in a crystal ball to say like when it's going to calm down, when the housing is going to become more reasonable again.
I know it's crazy. And I just don't understand why Google would do that. Cause it forces the hand of the employee to really like, you mean I can't, I'm fully remote. You mean I can't choose to live in whatever city I choose to, or state where I choose to live. Now you're going to pay me based on state, not position and value what I bring to the organization, just so you guys I got to stay in California to or New York to.
But just to give like context, a software engineer in New York City is making $250,000 a year, and that software engineer is making $100,000 in Charlotte.
Yeah.
So if the Google engineer is making even more, they're making $300,000 to be at 90%. And I'm kind of pulling numbers off the top of my head, so please don't quote me on anything that I'm saying. But some of the differences are truly this big. So you know what? I've made the New York City salaries. They're insane. I would love to go and live in a lower cost of living area with that same salary. But that's, you know, it's interesting because pre-pandemic, as soon as you made that move, the adjustment would have been made. So no one would have had the expectation of going and living somewhere else and not being paid based on the market in which they live. It's because in the pandemic for 18 months, it was like, we don't know what's going on. We're not going to change any of these things because we don't know when you're coming. First of all, it was you're coming back in the office in 2 weeks. Then it's you're coming back in the office in 2 months. And now it's like, maybe you're going to be back in the office in 2 months. So maybe now we can start to make these adjustments. So I think the expectations were skewed. For me and the companies that I've worked at and with, that has always been the status quo. There has always been a pay difference between the person sitting in New York and the person sitting in Charlotte. And that has been known. And it's not because of the cost of living, it's because of the actual local markets. Now, if those local markets are starting to rise, because now those local companies need to compete with these mm-hmm. big, well-funded companies or companies with massive coffers, that's a different story. Yeah. But if someone is moving because they're choosing, not being forced, just I decided I wanted to go live here. Mm-hmm. If they're making 10% less, but it's still a ridiculous number, I honestly, like, I'm probably going to get flack for this, but I can't feel that bad because you should have had the foresight because it was the way that it worked before. I know that if I was the person making that move and taking what I perceived as a pay cut might be a little bit harder. But for example, I've lived and worked in three different countries. And my husband has done international transfers, and his salary in Ireland was extraordinarily different than his salary in New York, even though he was working for the same company. Different salary, different benefits, different vacation policies. These are all based on the market. So eventually at some point, like, okay, so if we're going to set the point at just one random point, why aren't we setting it for the person in Phoenix, Arizona, another place mm-hmm. like where salaries are generally lower compared to these big markets? Well, why aren't we picking Phoenix? And I think what Google really did was they communicated it in, we're taking away 10% as opposed to the base salary is this, and you get this multiplier in these big cities.
Smart. I get it.
So it was, okay. It was their own bad PR to a certain degree. Because that's essentially what it always has been.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, again, I think it sucks when it's happening to you and when you've now been living and making decisions off of it. But it also, I think, was something that probably could have been communicated out by companies as well.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. And I want to be, we can talk all night. This is really good. But I want to be mindful of your time. So I definitely need a part two from you. in 2022. So I will call awesome. Out to you again, but
yes.
And let me just recap some of the things that you said, the 3 points I think is crucial when we're talking about, you know, workplaces aren't working. And from your perspective, you're saying it's the undervalued, mm-hmm. right? The work structure. And then number three is the rules of engagement, the office politics, mm-hmm. which is causing not just the great resignation, but the great reshuffle. Yeah. In that process. So that's key. And I think I'm sure you'll make a nice, strong post about that at some point. Because I think when people start to read that and really understand, and organizations will start to unpack a lot of things and be like, okay, where do we fall in this new landscape of work? Can we operate hybrid?
Yeah.
Let's look at what's happened over the course of the last year and a half, 2 years. Did we go up in production? Did we go down in revenue? What did that mm-hmm. look like, right? Did we grow mm-hmm. the talent we acquired? All those things. It's like, wow, mm-hmm. okay, it's working. Yep. And what are people saying? You know, what is the team saying, the employees, the front lines, et cetera? So great stuff. Phenomenal stuff, Jennifer. Thank you so, so much.
Yeah.
Where can people follow you, share everything that you have, all your social media handles?
So I live on the internet, so I'm easy to find. The main place to find me is on YouTube. So youtube.com/Jennifer Brick. You should find my channel there. Lots of videos, lots of rants coming. Because again, I'm pretty obsessed right now with just dismantling a lot of the beliefs and constructs that we've been operating under that I think that have gone out of date and we can use an upgrade. However, I don't just live there. So I also hang out on LinkedIn pretty much every day, pretty much posting there every day. So if you just can't get enough, YouTube is insufficient. LinkedIn is the next spot. I also hang out on Instagram. I like to have conversations in the stories over there. I like to ask a lot of questions and like answer questions myself over there. And I'm kind of hot and cold, but I occasionally hang out on TikTok as well.
I'm telling you, folks, go to her Instagram. I can't tell you. It's hilarious. It's almost like watching a career educational skit or a TV show. It's funny. The content is good, but the way she delivers it is awesome. So
I'm like, is little this... snippets of salt.
Yeah. Exactly. It's awesome. Well, once again, thank you so much again, Jennifer, for your expertise, your time, your insight. Definitely enjoyed that. And again, I absolutely, if you'll come back, I want to have you back next year to unpack this some more, because I think you have a unique perspective on this for sure. So I'm going to close this out. But thank you again. Don't leave just yet. I'll put you back in the green room and close us out, and we'll chat for 2 seconds.
Awesome. Nice to see you, everyone.
Hey, everybody. Thanks again for watching another episode of Career Talks. My sole mission is to provide actionable advice for job seekers that will impact their career and ultimately their life. But I need your support. So if you can simply subscribe to the podcast so I can take this message further, I would greatly appreciate it. I look forward to your support, and I'll see you next week.